Good afternoon, colleagues. The secretary will call the roll.
Allen, Archuleta, Atkins, Bates, Bell, Borges, Bradford, Caballero, Chang, Daly, Dodd, DeRosso, Galgiani, Glazer, Gonzalez, Grove, Hertzberg, Hill, Hueso, Hurtado, Jackson, Jones, Leyva, McGuire, Mitchell, Monning, Morlock, Morrell, Nielsen, Pan, Portantino, Roth, Rubio, Skinner, Stern, Umberg, Wykowski, Wiener, Wilk.
Senators, a quorum is present. Would the members and our guests beyond the rail and in the gallery please rise? We will be led in prayer this afternoon by our chaplain, Sister Michelle Gorman, after which, please remain standing. We will be led in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag by Senator Galgiani.
Isn't it great to be back by popular demand? As we begin today, I've taken a few liberties with the following poem by Brendan Kennelly called Begin Again. Begin again to the summoning birds, to the sight of the light at the window. Begin to the roar of morning traffic all along L Street. Every beginning is a promise, born in light and dying in dark. Determination and exaltation of springtime, flowering the way to work. Begin to the pageant of queuing constituents, the arrogant loneliness of crows downtown, bridges linking the past and future, old friends passing, though with us still. Begin to the loneliness that cannot end, since it perhaps is what makes us begin. Begin to wonder at unknown faces, at crying birds in the sudden rain. Though we live in a world that dreams of ending, that always seems about to give in, something that will not acknowledge conclusion insists that we forever begin. And so, gracious and merciful God, be with us this year as we dare to trust that our work can benefit the lives of so many people in our state. We thank you for our courage and our desire to begin again. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Members, we're going to move on to privileges of the floor. We have welcome back remarks from Madam Pro Tem.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, it's so good to see all of you, and certainly my pleasure, and in a moment I will include recognition of our Republican leader from Bakersfield to maybe add to some opening comments. So it's really a pleasure to welcome all of you, us, back to the second of our two-year session. And I think, as you remember, when we were last in this chamber, we had to leave in a bit of a hurry. So I wanted to begin then my comments by thanking, of course, some important people, the cleaning crews and the Department of General Services staff, who got the chamber ready for our return. And it took a little more effort than you might imagine to do that, just to be clear. And certainly DGS, who takes very good care of us all year round. You know, it seems like a good time to thank again, of course, our sergeants and the California Highway Patrol officers who dedicate themselves to keeping everyone in the Capitol safe and certainly did that for us the last night of session. I hope you were all able to enjoy, of course, the holidays with your loved ones, to be able to get out into the communities and get some energy and ideas from your constituents and the organizations in your districts. I know that I did. I certainly appreciate that energy that drives us and brings us back here today that my constituents and the people in my district shared with me, and I know you feel the same way. It is going to be, not shockingly or surprisingly, a very busy year. We have the immediate task of addressing the bills that were made two-year bills in 2019, so we have work to do in January. We have an ongoing responsibility to fix our state's crisis, of course, in affordable housing and homelessness. We have to keep addressing the increasing risk to lives and to property due to wildfires and climate change. And I want to thank Senator Hueso and all of the members and senators who took part in the energy and the utilities communications hearing on wildfire responses in November. I want to thank you. There were members who came who were not part of that committee. So I want to thank you for that work during the interim and making the trip to Sacramento for those of you who did. It's an important discussion to investigate and review the options to address deficiencies in our current public safety power shutoff process. We know that. And I'm really grateful to all the local emergency responders, and I know that you are too, as I look around the room and I see the folks who lived it every day in California. To the healthcare providers and the other impacted parties who participated and provided critical information to all of us in our communities, and to those of us who reached out when our community wasn't in desperation to lend moral support to our colleagues and to their communities. The Senate, as most of you know, will hold the next hearing on wildfire preparedness this week. Thank you for scheduling that so quickly. The topic will be telecommunications issues surrounding wildfires. So we will continue with that work. You know, outside the Capitol, I know that 2020 is going to be an important year for California's future with the census. That's work that needs to be done, certainly with the March and November elections. We have to continue our efforts as a legislative body to help ensure that everyone counts and everyone votes, regardless of affiliation, regardless of status. It's important that we recognize what makes California strong, and we do our part to support all of those efforts from wherever we come. I want to take a minute to speak directly to the staff today on behalf of my colleagues. I want you to know that I personally and this Senate as an institution remain committed to changing the culture of this Capitol and providing a workplace that values respect, civility, and diversity. When both houses of the legislature worked to create the Workplace Conduct Unit, it was to ensure a thorough and independent process for resolving complaints about sexual harassment and misconduct. And I know it's been a while since we started this process, but I want to make sure that you know we are still committed, we are still engaged, we are still in that process. And I know that it can take a while to build trust. But if any staff or member of our Capitol community needs the Workplace Conduct Unit, I sincerely hope you will call on them. Change doesn't come easy, but I know change is happening and will continue to happen. And I want to particularly acknowledge the members of the Rules Committee, our Vice Chairman from Santa Clarita, members from Carmel, Riverside, and Laguna Niguel, because this last year and a half for those that have served on the Rules Committee has been a real effort in thoughtfulness, in how we approach this, and on behalf of the staff in this building, and I want to thank you for that work. I want to thank you. Finally, to our Secretary Contreras, the Chief Assistant Secretary McNulty, and all of the incredible desk staff. First, you look rested and ready to go, so I want to say thank you for all of the work that you do on behalf of us. We apologize to you in advance for all that we are about to do that we know will cause you more work, but we know that you're committed and we know that's why you're here, but we do want to thank you. And with that, I would very much, with your permission, Madam President, like to offer the opportunity to the Republican leader from Bakersfield to give a welcome and some remarks.
Well, thank you, Madam Pro Tem. I appreciate that very much. It is a great opportunity to welcome all of us back to the Senate for this new 2020, new decade, new cycle that we have. It's the second year, and I know we have a lot of work that has to be done. I want to echo the President Pro Tem's comments regarding the desk staff and how wonderful that you absolutely are in the leadership under Bernie, Ms. McNulty, and also Ms. Contreras. I want to thank everybody for the hard work that they put in last year. I know there wasn't a lot of comments that were made at the end of last cycle. There was a lot of confusion and some stuff that happened that I don't think anybody in the history of this institution has ever experienced. And so moving to that little room and, you know, the hearing room, and then but still fulfilling our obligations as legislators and being able to serve the citizens of California. I want to thank the caucus staff on both sides. They work really hard to make sure that we get the information that we need to make good decisions. And I want to thank all my members who stood with us that last night. And we just engaged in a process that was very difficult to engage in, but we all came through. I do want to definitely thank the security staff and the sergeant-at-arms that take really good care of us and make sure that we're safe. And I look forward to a wonderful 2020, and I hope that everything works out much better than it did last year. And I look forward to working on the homeless issues. We have priorities that we've set in place, and I think that we agree on a lot of those things. You know, the homeless issue is one of the number one crises in the state of California. We have water issues in the Central Valley where we grow the food that your constituents eat. So there's a lot of things that we need to accomplish this year to make California more affordable and a better place to live and a safer place to live. So thank you very much for the opportunity to say a few remarks, and let's get started with 2020.
Thank you very much. I'm going to add my welcome to all as we begin our work in 2020. Moving on in the agenda, messages from the governor will be deemed read. Messages from the assembly will be deemed read. Reports of committee will be deemed read and amendments adopted. Motions, resolutions, and notices. Without objection, the following bills with floor amendments will be deemed read and the amendments adopted. SB 175 and SB 38. Introduction and first reading of bills. Secretary, please read.
Senate Bill 793.
Bills will be deemed read. Returning to motions and resolutions, this is the time to address the adjourn in memory motions from senators, Senator Bates, and Senator Morlock. You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam. I have an adjourn in memory for an icon of Orange County. Many of you might have already seen her obituary, but I'd like to read portions of it because Joan Irvine Smith was certainly a woman for the century, not just the decade. Her life and her accomplishments certainly span many, many decades. So let me begin. Joan Irvine Smith, a philanthropist, arts patron, and heiress to one of Orange County's founding fortunes, was instrumental in establishing UC Irvine, died Thursday. Her family said she was 86. She was born in 1933 as Ethelie Anita Irvine and raised in Beverly Hills, Pasadena, in what was then rural Orange County. Her father died of tuberculosis when she was two, and by age four, she was calling herself Joan, inspired by the character of Little Jumping Joan in a Mother Goose nursery rhyme. The family business, the Irvine Company, was founded by her grandfather, James Irvine II, and the family ranch originally covered more than 110,000 acres, or nearly one-third of Orange County. On his death in 1947, she inherited a minority share of the company, which he had left in the control of a nonprofit philanthropic foundation the James Irvine Foundation, whose board she would battle for years, and certainly that was chronicled in the papers over many years, in fact, a decade. She was 24 years old in 1957 when she joined the Irvine Company's board of directors, replacing her mother as the only female member. That's in 1957, ladies. It was then that I began my very liberal education in the machinations of corporate intrigue, she said years later. She quickly established herself as an independent-minded board member, and to other members, a frequently vexing dissenting voice. Its then chairman called her spoiled and guided by self-interest. And what an overstatement. Joan Irvine Smith was guided by an interest that certainly benefited generations of Orange Countyans and certainly the people of California. Smith fought the board to prevent what she called the rapid and disorderly development of the ranch lands, and was said to carry a hidden tape recorder to board meetings so deeply she distrusted the other members. After years of lobbying, she and her lawyers persuaded Congress to change the tax code to curb tax-exempt foundations from running private firms, which helped her to finally dislodge the foundation from dominance over the company. She waged a campaign which she described as a frequently bitter two-year battle to force the Irvine Company board to donate 1,000 acres of land in 1960 for the campus of the University of California at Irvine. She touted it as a good business decision, pointing to the economic effect UCLA had in Los Angeles. Sometimes described as regal, eccentric, irascible, she portrayed herself as a guardian of the Irvine Company, founded by her grandfather. In the early 1980s, she feuded publicly with Donald Brand, who had become the Irvine Company's major shareholder, and fought unsuccessfully in court to block his proposal to merge the firm with his holding company. She said the merger was unfair to minority shareholders like herself and would saddle the company with heavy debt. On that, she happened to not be quite right, guys. She finally severed ties with the company in 1990 when she and her mother took a $256 million buyout. She was a very important participant in the history of the all-new city of Irvine and Orange County, Bren said. She will be missed. She championed Crystal Cove State Park on part of what had been her family ranch, and founded the Irvine Museum, which she filled with her art collection, notably in the genre of California Impressionism. Observers sometimes speculated that she was trying to atone for her family's role in paving over a good portion of the county. In 2001, when she stood up to oppose a developer's plan to put new cottages at Crystal Cove State Park, the crowd chanted her name. The plan was defeated, and as you know, that is a beautiful coastal park as it sits today. Smith also played a role in establishing the Laguna Coast Wilderness Park, the Irvine Park, and the Irvine Bowl. She wanted to carry the mantle of the family and felt strongly about preserving her grandfather's legacy, said Ellen Bell, a board member of the Orange County Historical Society and a historian of the area. She was part of the movement that made the city of Irvine of today possible. She is survived by her three sons, James Irvine Swindon, Russell S. Penniman IV, and Morton Irvine Smith, and six grandchildren. And I had the privilege, the honor, and the entertainment, actually, to have worked with Joan on a number of issues when I was on the Orange County Board of Supervisors, and she certainly was everything that says in this memento or memorial about her, one heck of a woman. She really carved the future for Irvine and certainly for women and their place on boards and what they bring to the mantle of leadership. Thank you.
Senator Moorlach.
Thank you, Madam President. Happy New Year. Joan Irvine Smith was an incredible art collector. She purchased some of the most amazing California Impressionist artwork probably on the planet. She's probably acquired so much that it's increased the value of all the remaining pieces out there. But if you want to see William Wendt or Edgar Payne or Jack Wilkinson Smith, please come to my office. They're on display. They're on loan from the Irvine Museum, which is an incredible opportunity when you ever come to Orange County near John Wayne Airport. And she has donated her collection to the University of California, Irvine. So we are all beneficiaries from her generosity. So I had them up in my Capitol office. I had them up in my supervisor's office. In fact, when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor, he actually had original pieces from her collection in the lobby. And you can still see some of them. They're on display in the Department of Finance right here on the first floor that are available. But we had a lot of fun, Senator Bates and I, working with Joan Irvine Smith. We have San Onofre nuclear generating plant just at the north part of San Diego County, south part of Orange County, and the only road in and out was the Highway 5. And we just said, we've got to find a way to find an alternate route, you know, to get out of if anything ever happens. And so we had La Pata Road, or Avenida La Pata, you know, all the fun stuff we do with San Juan Capistrano and San Clemente. But we had the landfill in between. But Senator Bates and I worked really hard when we had our 8 years on the board to connect La Pata. And that was basically an inspiration from Joan Irvine Smith. Two interesting stories. The first is when I first became a supervisor, the county had just completed recreating the Irvine Ranch home. It's called the Katie Wheeler Library in Irvine. It is an identical reproduction of the original Irvine Ranch home that had burned to the ground. And Joan Irvine Smith calls me and says, I just toured the place. It was just before we were going to dedicate it. And she said, I feel like a fourth grader all over again. It's all the same from when I was a child. And she was so animated. It was one of a real fun phone call to have. One of the awkward phone calls was a reporter. And he called and said, I see you have all this artwork from the Irvine Museum in your office. How are you reporting that on your contribution forms? And I said, they're on loan. This should be Morlock decorates office for free article. But no, he said, no, this isn't right. What if they loaned you a car? And I said, well, how would I get that car up to the fifth floor of the Board of Supervisors to show it off to everyone? Because Joan Irvine Smith wanted her artwork out in public. And I said, hey, even the governor has her artwork. He calls the governor's office and demands to know how Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to report the value of the paintings in the lobby on his annual, or his reports. The reporter calls me a day after the article came out, because it wasn't a very nice article. And he calls me and he says, you know, I just got off the phone with Joan Irvine Smith. It was a 3-hour phone call. But one of the sad parts about that article is that I had the chance to bump into her son, James Irvine Swindon. And he said, you know, we've been trying to get so many museums to get their pieces out in public. And when that article hit, a lot of the museums said, we don't want to go there now. And so that reporter deserved a 3-hour phone call from Joan Irvine Smith. But she was an incredible matriarch in Orange County, and it is an honor to adjourn in her memory, and which the family our deepest regards at this time of loss. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you very much. Please extend our sincere condolences to the family as we memorialize her here today. Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Madam President, and I too want to wish everyone a Happy New Year. It's with great sadness that I stand here and a great sense of loss that I ask that we adjourn in the memory of a distinguished Californian, and that in the person of Dr. Derek Marshall, better known as Derry, a individual that has been a friend of mine for almost 30 years, though he resides in Senator Mitchell's district. Dr. Marshall was born in August 22nd, 1959 in Washington, D.C., the youngest of three children, to his parents, Dr. Granville H. Marshall Sr. and Jacqueline S. Marshall. And he's the nephew of the renowned Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American to ever be appointed to that court. Dr. Marshall and his family moved to Los Angeles in 1960, where he attended Windsor Hills Elementary School and Westchester High School. He was an exceptional athlete. He loved participating in sports, especially Pop Warner youth football. Dr. Marshall attended the University of San Francisco, where he participated in intramural sports and was active in several clubs and organizations, developing a keen interest in civil rights movement and social engagement. To fulfill his childhood goal of becoming a dentist, Dr. Marshall worked diligently to complete his coursework in just 3 years and enrolled in Howard University, where he graduated in 1984. Upon graduation, he joined his father to form the Marshall Dentist Group practice, serving an African-American community throughout Los Angeles and one of the most respected dentistry organizations in the area. Having met the love of his life after returning home from college, Dr. Marshall married Colleen Neal on September 26, 1992. The couple raised two children, twins. Danielle, who followed her father's footsteps to attend Howard University, and Derek, who's enrolled now in the University of New Mexico. His work extended into the community, where he served as an active member on the Angels City Dental Society, the National Dental Association, and Howard University Alumni Club of Los Angeles County. He also was a member of Chi Delta Mu fraternity and served on the Board of Trustees as the Holman United Methodist Church, one of the oldest African-American churches in Los Angeles. Also, in his pastime, he enjoyed rooting for the Lakers, the Dodgers, and the Raiders, and he enjoyed live music. I used to take great delight in seeing him at the annual Playboy Jazz Festival, where he would hold court in a box with many of his dentistry colleagues. Dr. Marshall leaves to mourn his passing, his wife, Colleen, his children, Derek Spencer Marshall Jr., his daughter, Danielle Elizabeth Marshall, his siblings, and many more family and friends, one being Samuel Joseph Hill, his childhood friend and former chief of staff here on the assembly side. Members, I humbly ask that we adjourn in the memory of Derek Marshall, Dr. Derek Marshall, who was admired and appreciated for his generosity of spirit, his love of family, and his wonderful sense of humor and a genuine capacity to share his time and talents with all that he encountered. He was an exceptional dentist, but more importantly, he was an exceptional human being. I ask that we adjourn in his memory. He'll be sorely missed, but never forgotten.
Please bring Dr. Marshall's name to the desk so that he can be properly memorialized by the Senate. Members, if there is no other business, Senator Atkins, the desk is clear.
Madam President, thank you so much. We will reconvene on Thursday, January 9th at 9 a.m. Thank you.
The Senate will be in recess until 3:30, at which time the adjournment motion will be made. We will reconvene Thursday at 9 a.m.